But of course, the thing with the Steam Deck is it's not cross-platform anymore because it's all on Steam, but it's just now like...
Mm-hmm. Well, this is actually the interesting thing, I think, about this you know, walled garden strategy, right? Of saying... Because the goal is to keep people where they are. But it also creates a blocker for people coming in. Because if you already have the thing somewhere else and your data is not portable...
It is a wall. Walls work in both directions. Yeah, that's true. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 321 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast, Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and I could be anybody.
Sam. That's it. That's all I got.
That's where we are.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe that's who I am.
This is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is July 20th, 2021. Before we get started, we have a warning. There's going to be profanity on this show. So if you don't like that, then you don't keep going past this moment because it's probably coming real soon.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Also,
who's going to break the seal? Not the animal, you know, but like, but the, you know, the
yeah, there's always that guy just breaking seals out there. Stop. That's
the whole thing.
It's not what the phrase
is. You can't break them. They're too blubbery. They're very floppy, you know.
Oh, you're saying it's like trying to break a Stretch Armstrong, you know.
I see. So who's going to break the seal is sort of like a challenging the impossible sort of a question.
Yeah.
Who's going to?
Nope. Who's going to finally be the one?
And once you figure it out, the impossible, you just made it possible. You know, that's the whole idea of breaking the seal.
People mean when they say break the seal.
Yeah, because then people just start doing it now from then on.
Wow. You broke the seal, Adam.
Yep.
You really did something I didn't think was possible.
Wait, can we have this phrase catch up? Kind of amazing.
You can't break seals. They're so bendy. You can bend the seal. And that's just expected. That's just what they do, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, it's kind of like...
It's like being whelmed.
Is it kind of like spaghetti? Mm-hmm. So you know spaghetti, right?
Yeah.
You've heard of spaghetti. Familiar. So spaghetti, it's... So
it comes, you're saying that the seal has to be dry.
No, I'm saying there's an interesting phenomenon. This is almost related. If you bend a piece of spaghetti in half, right? You bend it so you can until it breaks. It always breaks into at least three pieces.
Oh,
isn't that fucking?
As in, if
weird?
You hold it from the edges and bend it,
yeah, take it on the edges and you pieces. Take it on the edges. Like, so you try to bend it until it breaks. It will always, without fail, break into it.
That's true. Now,
isn't
okay,
that weird. Now, seals though.
Let's just ride this tangent. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
How many pieces does a seal break into?
So seals, it's
nobody
same,
knows.
We got the same problem. Exactly. We don't know how many pieces they break into because nobody's broken the seal yet.
Nobody's right? broken the seal.
But what's going to happen though? Is it going to be, because we're talking about like it gets bendy, but so does spaghetti. You start bending it, it just bends it for a while, right? But then all of a sudden, it explodes into at least three pieces.
Well, and again, that's why, you know, the common phrase break the seal is sort of also used as a reference to venturing into the unknown. You know, we're really breaking the seal on this one. We don't know what's going to happen.
It could be any number of pieces.
This could go a lot of different ways, you know, explosively, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, as a final addendum to this tangent, I like how we can be on a tangent before we've even had a topic to begin with.
Yeah, this isn't a tangent. This is actually what this episode is about.
This is just what the episode is.
Once we start talking about the things we meant to talk about, that will be the tangent.
Another phrase that I feel needs to catch on is you've heard of something hitting like a wet noodle. Okay.
Mm, yes.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Nobody ever talks about something hitting like a dry noodle, you know, which
not
I feel
that different,
like
really.
It's basically the same.
You mean in the sense of like anything, if you slap someone with a dry noodle, does it break into three pieces again? Is this like
Well, I think it's equally inconsequential probably.
But the difference is though, is that a piece like a wet noodle, because it's actually, I think people are interpreting this backwards, right? Because a wet noodle is a whip, right?
Yeah.
So if you're specifically saying wet instead of dry, because the dry noodle can't do nearly as much damage as a wet noodle because noodle is a whip. So you can accelerate its velocity and actually like cause some significant – because it's all about bringing the momentum into the human flesh, right?
That's true.
You can get so
a
much
wet noodle, it is a noodle.
But a wet noodle has to be like way more powerful than a dry noodle. So if you're going to be specifying the liquid content of the noodle, it seems like if you wanted to get at the weakest noodle that exists, you talk about
dry noodle.
And not only that, but a dry noodle – you can't even eat it after you get hit by it. So it's even more useless than that, right? So being hit by a dry noodle, I feel like should be the standard of being hit weekly, you know.
By a dry noodle, yeah.
Not like, every week, yeah, week fortnightly.
Yeah. Weekly. Yes. Unless fortnightly. Maybe the original person just thought of like hitting as stabbing, right? Like to them, they hadn't heard of the concept of hitting with like a hand. They were just like, oh yeah, hitting, that's when you stab somebody, right? Because in that case, wet noodles, really bad at stabbing.
Not good stabbing.
Dry noodles. Yep. Pretty good stabbing, actually.
It's pretty true. Good stabbing. Yeah,
there's a good chance it'll break into three pieces, at least.
Which will shard into your enemies.
Yeah, exactly. It's actually even better because it's a shrapnel.
The first shrapnel tool.
Okay.
Shrapnel weaponry.
Yep. Okay. I feel like we've explored the space adequately. So let's get into the episode.
Okay.
Let's do it. All right. Now, a bunch of stuff happened. Four things happened. So we'll probably get to two of them and then the episode will be over. So let's get started. First, Sam did something this morning.
Got locked out of the house. Okay. And anytime you
– Not just you though.
Yes.
Diana also was there.
Correct.
Everyone got locked – everyone who lives in the house
was
got locked
out. Was Yogi also locked out of the house or was he still in the house?
Luckily, no. So Yogi's staying with the parents.
Okay.
This week while we're getting stuff set up.
So he was technically locked out of the house. I mean,
he technically has been locked out for like a week.
But I mean, like, he couldn't. Yeah. There's no way that Yogi could have gotten in either because he was
that's
not
true.
Inside,
no matter what,
the house was locked.
Honestly,
Everyone's
even if the door is unlocked, he can't get in.
That's also true.
You know what I mean?
He's got no thumbs.
Anyways, okay. So I need to. You gotta let me get the story out. Okay.
All right. I'm gonna sit back and let this story percolate.
Yeah, this is a big challenge that you're putting on all of us.
I know. So this morning we get up, and my wife and I have been handling all this stuff associated with getting a new place, you know, trying to both just do that, have chairs to sit on, you know, a bed to sleep in, etc. On top of like getting a few contractors for a new area, so switching out phones, etc. Just a lot of the stuff of life that usually you do over the course of, you know, a longer period of time than just sort of instantly, which is what happens when you move. So last night we specifically sat down. We're like, all right, these days are kind of a lot. So we're gonna look at Thursday. We're saying, okay, Thursday is like sort of the recovery day. All right, it's gonna be like very little going on. We'll sort of take it easy. It'll be a great day.
Maybe stay outside for a while.
Maybe stay outside for a little bit, get some sun. It'll be a great day. You know, Sam, you'll be able to just kind of focus on your work stuff like the whole day. Maybe hang out in the evening. Be super nice. Okay. So make this plan. Great. And actually, we know we even know what's happening for like lunch and dinner. Like way more planned ahead of time as a unit than we have ever been. Okay.
We were like, today's the day that we have the whole day planned.
Yes. Exactly.
For once.
And mainly it's about like just being able to like relax and easily get back into your rhythm. Okay.
Oh yeah.
So morning kicks off actually great. Go for our morning walk in the new neighborhood, meet some neighbors for the first time. Super nice. See a lawn guy. We need a lawn guy. Talk to the lawn guy, hire the lawn guy. Boom. Saved a phone call and scheduling all this stuff. Amazing. We're back in the house. It's closing in on like, I think 8:30, 8:45 or so. And so I'm like, oh, I'm going to do some work. Diana says, hey, do you want to make some breakfast real quick? Maybe just eat on the patio since you got like 15 minutes before you want to start. It's like, perfect. So make this food up. It's looking real good. Take it outside, sit down, start eating it. Beautiful day, sun shining, birds chirping. We're like, oh, wow, today's going so great. Can't wait to get in there and kick some butt. Got the podcast coming up. Turn around, try to go inside, and wouldn't you know it, the door's locked behind us.
And I assume that means it's an auto-locking, one of those auto-locking doors?
It's basically just a door knob, right, with like the little
latch. Oh, the turny thing. So the turny thing.
Yep. So perilous.
So because we came in after our walk, one of us, I don't even know, neither of us even remembers doing it. One of us probably just locked it out of habit while we closed it. But then, you know. Outside, there we are. So, because you can just open that door. Like, there's no feedback on the fact that it is locked, right? You can just open it, go outside, close it, and now you're stuck.
Wait, so did you open it with the knob that was locked?
Yes, this thing.
And it doesn't unlock it when you do that?
No. Like,
is that always
true? It's a very old lock, so I don't know. Okay. I don't know if – yeah, it's an older house. So I don't know. Who knows?
I have to investigate this on my own door to find out how perilous that actually is.
Again, though, one of the perils of a move is, you know, that unfamiliarity with the booby traps in your own
100%.
House.
Yeah. So this starts escalating further because we're outside and we don't happen to neither of us bring our phones. Okay. So now both of us are like, let's see if there's like a a window that we can crank into. So we go in, start running around the whole house trying to find sort of some method of to get in. We're not very skilled burglars. So after a short period of time, meet back at the front door, we're like, oh no, we can't get in for real.
Now you have a sense of how a burglar might try to get in.
Not a very penetrable home, which is nice. Go down the street and see some people. We actually saw some people walking from our yard. Basically run after them. Meet some more neighbors, but now under the context of like, can we borrow your phone because we locked ourselves out of the house? End up getting this call done. And this whole time, though, I want to call Adam and Seth, let them know like, hey, we're probably going to be like podcasting in like 15, 20 minutes, but I'm kind of locked out of the house. But I don't actually remember Adam or Seth's phone numbers anymore because we've switched them a couple of times over the years, right? And the most recent one, I think, being maybe 3 or 4 years ago or something like that. And so I don't have these things in my memory at all. Can't even do this, right? so I'm like, shit. Okay. So I'm about to jank up like everybody's day. So I'm like, okay, cool. So stress factor starts to ramp. We do get a hold of a locksmith. Waiting on the locksmith for about 15 minutes. And then some guy shows up who we were both very excited because we thought it was him and it seemed like it'd be a good time. But turns out it was like an insurance inspector guy to come like take some pictures of the house and stuff like that. And we're looking at the house with him, and this guy is one of those people who just like talks literally constantly, and like says some real whack shit, and he's going off on like all sorts of political stuff, going off about like minorities, going off about like all sorts of weird shit, and we're walking around the house with him, and this whole time I'm just like, wow, this could not get any more horrifying. So. What happened between the insurance inspector arriving and us calling the locksmith was that Diana, turns out, the moment that the lock had proven to be impenetrable, so we couldn't get inside the house, had basically a quake of fear in her guts. Okay. Mm-hmm. And she was like, and I didn't get her permission to share this, by the way. And she was like, Sam, I need to take a shit.
To get this fear out. Yeah,
I got to get out. It's in solid form inside my body, and it has to be vacated now. Uh-huh. And I was like, you have to hold it. It's going to be like 15 minutes. It's gonna be another. She was like, okay. And then a few minutes later, she's like, I'm going to go for a walk around the property.
Oh, no.
So she comes back, sort of like grinning, and she's like.
Comes back with a pep in her step.
She's like, I shit in the woods. And I was like, you fucking did what? Okay, so now fast forward, back with the inspector guy, by the way, with a camera outside, but walking around the property. he's going off about minorities while he's walking down what Diana believed to be like the hidden path where she took a shit. And I'm just like, oh my God, no. And so we try to misdirect him away back toward the house. And then
I'm here to inspect.
Yes.
I'm going to look everywhere.
And he's got his little camera, fucking taking pictures. Show up in the driveway.
I have to take a picture of everything that has happened this morning.
Yeah. Show up in the driveway. I now know way more about this man's political beliefs, history, ex-wives, everything that I could possibly want to know.
Probably then more than anyone should know about his beliefs, frankly.
Absolutely. And then the locksmith shows up. And it's a Hispanic dude. And I'm like, please, weirdly racist inspector man who cannot stop talking. Please hold your tongue. Yeah. And so now, and of course, he's standing there by the door waiting for all this. So basically, this whole thing is just like, vum, 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 like just rolling up this sort of stress engine on this whole thing.
So you're now worried you're going to have sort of like a big throwdown in
or
front
just
of
like
your house.
Just having to have just that situation be happening the whole time. And then the locksmith guy, we'd think like, oh yeah, he's just going to crack into it. It should be easy. We've seen guys like, pop these things open. Ends up happening to just like having to just basically drill out the door knob and basically like, rip it off. And
that's good luck.
Thing, it was good luck. But this whole thing just freaking like cascaded out of a simple problem in the morning of like just walking out. And it was just so much.
a lot.
Well, and also, like, if you guys had been in the house, the insurance person would have come and just taken the pictures and left.
He did need to come inside, though. This is the thing. He actually did need to come inside for whatever
reason. Oh, okay. Yeah. Sometimes they just do outside pictures and you don't have to engage. Mm-hmm. But I got to wonder what he thought that was. Like, what he thought this scenario was that made it totally cool for him to just be like that. I think it's
usually that people don't get called out for that. So,
yeah, that's
so fair. He's been able just to do it, you know?
Yeah. But you just go to total, like, his whole job is going to strangers' houses. And apparently, this is just how he does it.
Yeah. I've actually never met a person who talked the way this guy did, in terms of just the constancy of it. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, it was all over the
place.
Which
also takes it to another level, too, right? Because people already feel really uncomfortable and then don't address it in the moment. But even if you wanted to, by the time you start to do it, he's talking about something else now.
Literally, right? Yes.
So he's like, he's actually protected himself. He's insulated his shitty beliefs even more than they're already insulated by, white supremacy and the patriarchy. But he's gone a step further and said, also, I have a shield of words. You know, you can't. Mm-hmm.
There would be no space for anybody around.
Now, this reminds me, in high school, we weren't allowed to have water bottles, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I started carrying around a gallon jug of water to drink. And nobody said anything about it because I think I so egregiously sort of surpassed what was acceptable that people felt like, I don't think I'm qualified to deal with this.
Well, I think it's the sense of like being able to. Yeah, it's the sense of being able to like cap a garden hose, which is like the normal experience with people saying weird shit, versus like capping a fire hose, which is just like, I don't even know. Didn't even know. Stress level was already maxed out. And I'm like, I would just like this to be over as quickly as possible. Just do not engage.
Yep, that's how everybody who sees that guy feels.
Oh my God. It hits a point where all you can do is flee the scene and try to not get hit by collateral things flying around.
Yep.
That sounds like a time that you had.
That was a great start. Great start to the day.
So there's a reason that this will never happen to me, which doesn't have anything to do with like the locks and so on. It's that my primary ADHD mechanism to not lose my keys, period, is to always have them in my pocket, just no matter what. Mm-hmm. Just like they're always going to be in there. So I don't think about not locking myself out.
Well, here's the best part.
But I'm wondering, because is that what you do? But then like a system fell through because of like moving and like all this other stuff that was there too?
If it's just going out on like the back porch or something, like no. Because I'm not used to doors trying to lock me out.
Yeah. But so you're not as like paranoid about your keys always being in your pocket as I am.
Yeah. Okay. But importantly, I had ordered a lock to replace this lock with that is a touchpad lock, which then because of the move, swapping these addresses, the order was delayed for about 4 hours. So instead of coming yesterday, being able to install it last night.
Did it come today?
It's coming this afternoon. So I'm just like and Diana was like kind of on the fence about like whether or not we even needed one of these. And after today, she's like, oh, yeah, I'm 100% get it.
We need one of those.
get it here now. So yeah, that was my morning. That was the start to my day. Pretty good time.
Okay. That was a lot that happened.
Yep.
And that was all in the span of like 45 minutes.
Yep.
So cool. Well, we got on to topic number two.
Yeah, let's go.
Of the agenda.
Segway.
Dr. Evil went to space. No segue needed. That's right. What happened. Jeffrey Bezos flew his rocket into space, made by his company Blue Origin, as he is now an entrant into the billionaire launching themselves into space race, which is now ongoing. People couldn't help but comment on the shape of the rocket, which that coupled with the fact that Jeffrey Bezos has the exact hair and facial hair setup of Dr. Evil in that he's totally bald and totally clean shaven. Plus the various tone-deaf comments he made while in space. Like, I'd like to thank all the Amazon workers. You guys paid for this.
Yeah, right? He did say that.
And customers. Yeah, you guys paid for this.
Yeah, he really did. Yeah, I read that and I was like – Bezos.
Jeffrey Come Bezos. On.
Jeff, wow. You could have just not, though.
We could have just not. But I mean, like you can't be that guy and not also think in that way. And that was probably filtered so aggressively in his brain before he said that, because he wanted to turn the really horrible stuff, you know, like into something that he thought people thought was good, because he doesn't understand what like good is, you know?
So like, ooh, I'm showing gratitude.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, that was the best he could do. So like, what's going on?
You know how you guys have less money now because I have it?
And I blasted Thanks. It into space.
It's wild. Look what I did with it. The money that you now don't have.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it was great in the sense that it invited so many Dr. Evil memes. Mm-hmm. Because for those who don't know, Dr. Evil, character from Austin Powers, it's a 20-something-year-old movie by now.
Probably doesn't hold up, but I haven't seen
mid-20s. It. Mid-20s. Probably doesn't hold up, but there's a scene where Dr. Evil, the evil villain, escapes into space and freezes himself in space. And his rocket is incredibly phallic.
Yes.
And so, of course, so was Jeff Bezos' rocket, and that was that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. It's just it's what interesting.
Is
this,
like, what is – it's sort of a summation of the moment, though, isn't it? You know, in terms of just kind of where things have gotten to.
Mm-hmm. We've got people who are so individually wealthy that they're achieving things that entire governments have a hard time doing.
Most governments don't do at all.
With the summation of all the tax dollars of all their citizens. And
well, Jeff Bezos taxes, you know, the world.
Well, most of their citizens, except for the billionaires.
Yeah.
And so the idea that, we now have certain people who are wielding so much wealth and power that they are essentially their own miniature government, well, not even miniature government. I guess they just have hundreds of thousands of employees and their own bureaucracies and vast resources beyond belief. And they're, but you know, the one thing we can do is sort of downplay it and be like, wow, he only went to space for 15 minutes. That's not impressed.
Classic Bezos. Yep.
Yep.
Is that just a way for us to focus on the part that doesn't even matter, you know? Because now everybody's talking about how his spaceship looked and how he wasn't up there for very long, you know, which is easier to talk about because it's funny than that shit.
I think it's because it feels like it'll get
– implies.
It feels like when you're dealing with a person at that level of actual power, when it comes to like what you're talking about, what the fuck just happened, that using what end up being only essentially, you know – personal jabs feels like the only way to possibly break through to them, because clearly he doesn't give a shit about the fact that his workers are peeing in bottles. It's been that's a thing. It's been well aware for years now. But he obviously cares about himself because he put himself in a rocket to space.
He does, but he doesn't care about what people think of him.
There you go.
I don't think he needs that. I think he's self-contained.
I saw this great meme that was like it just said Amazon workers as soon as Jeffrey Bezos leaves the Earth's atmosphere. And then it was just a picture of a line of like 100 people waiting to go to the bathroom. It's like, yeah, I mean, that's
– Well, speaking of
– Amazon is notorious for this kind of treatment of their people. You know?
Well, speaking of gross employee violations, segue, Seth, you know.
Yeah. So we heard some stuff about – Blizzard Entertainment, well, Activision Blizzard, the whole company.
Yeah. We shouldn't get into the specifics because that's horrible.
We don't need to get into the specifics of exactly what is being alleged, but there's been a 2-year investigation by the government of the state of California into sexual misconduct of a large number of people at the company, plus a sort of pervasive drinking and frat-like culture there.
Basically, they described it as frat-like, which I think is pretty much the summary of all of the things that you would expect.
The specifics of the allegations are broad, deep, and pretty horrifying in terms of just the kinds of things that have been talked about occurring, and the fact that there was a 2-year-long investigation beforehand, and that the state feels as though they have the preponderance of the evidence to win a case like this and bring this case means that there is weight to the to the allegations, right? The many allegations. It's hard to kind of. I mean, we've talked about this in the past. The idea of like, I mean, even like buying stuff from Amazon, you know, like that you are supporting. Like here we are, like talking about Jeff Bezos and like what happens with Amazon employees, and like a package just came to my house today, right?
Like same.
Like I sent. He's like, you paid for this. I did pay for that. I did do that. And you know, as a longtime WoW player, you know, I'm sitting here thinking like, what does this mean for me, right? Because I think there's a problem here, which is it's that ethical problem that you always run into, where so many companies treat their people so badly that if that was your standard for whether you bought something from them, you would run out of things, right? Because every place is terrible, and I hate that that's true, and I don't know how to think about this, or like what my reaction should be.
Has there been a reaction on the player side as it relates to Blizzard? I haven't been following it at all. So,
oh yeah. I mean, there's thousands of people posting pictures of not just unsubscribing from things, but literally fully deleting their Battle.net accounts and stuff like that. But you know, like the same thing happened with Riot Games. Similar kinds of things came to light, and I don't know. It's hard to sort of disentangle like what is your relationship to this company as a customer, and what's your responsibility when stuff like this comes to light. You know, are you endorsing what they do by buying things from them, or is there no connection there?
Yeah, it ends up being a question to some degree of the responsibility, right? Because essentially, when people say stuff like, you know, vote with your wallet, right, about things, that's essentially what they're trying to get at, which is that the idea that the responsibility for consequences is actually on the customers associated with the business. Which in a way is both true and thoroughly not enough in terms of like, as you were talking about with Riot, as you're talking about with Blizzard, whatever else, the majority of people don't know that these things even happen. The majority of people who, you know, are involved with these games or these companies or whatever else. And so it's sort of like the recycling problem in some ways, which is like, it does feel like you could do your best to be like recycling, to be super, you know, eco-efficient and stuff, but there's like huge companies that are like, there's huge other entities that really should be more responsible for the management and the consequences associated with those things.
Yeah, well, it's the idea that the things causing the most, directly causing the most consequences are the ones that are not checked, actually being held accountable, right? And being forced to deal with it.
Well, not only that, but if, you know, I've been on and off a WoW subscriber since 2004. And many of these allegations go back that far, oof, right? And so the idea that like now that this is public and now that potentially something might actually be done about it in terms of dismantling the leadership, people are probably going to resign. Some people are probably going to get fired, you know. If I've been funneling money into this organization for like 17 years while all this was going on, if I stop now – does it even matter at that point?
Right.
Am I helping? Am I not helping? I don't know. I don't know what it even
means. I don't know. Right. I mean,
if you stop now and then things get overhauled and improved and whatever, right, then you also funded that improvement, right?
I only paid for them while they were being terrible, and then I stopped giving them money when they started turning it around. Right? Like, that's not good. But also, like, this, you know, it's my hobby, and I have a lot of friends in that game and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And like, and my experience of the game is, you know, fully detached from the experience of a person working inside that company, right? Right. And so if I, for example, said like, well, I'm done with this hobby, I hope I can stay in touch with the friends that I've made, but otherwise I'm now going to go find something totally different to do. I'm now like doing a, I'm now like taking something important away from my, from myself, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But to what end?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is the reality of like,
it would be like boycotting Amazon, right? And now you've got to like drive all over the place to buy the stuff you need, and mostly you won't get what you need, which sucks for you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, well, it's really about the question of like, where do you put your energy to actually make a difference? I think it's kind of what it comes down to, right? Because yeah. I think this is one of those challenges. And I'm curious for any of our podcast listeners as far as like, because this is, it's definitely one of those sort of philosophical and ethical quandary zones where like, I think depending on your approach, you can come up with a bunch of different answers depending on kind of what values you're leaning more so on here. But I think it's – I personally don't have like an answer as far as like
what well, I don't think there should is one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because think about like how many of my tax dollars have gone into the U.S. military?
Most of them.
Right.
That's the reality. The participation –
preponderance, right?
Yeah. Participation yeah, and in the economy generally is funding stuff. That is not yeah. good.
And so in a weird way, like by earning an income, I'm actually enabling people to be killed, mm-hmm. right? Because I'm paying taxes, right? I guess one solution is to become a billionaire so you don't have to pay taxes anymore.
There you go.
But yeah, I mean, it's – yeah, I don't know. There's – this. I mean, this is one of the themes of the show, The Good Place, right? Mm-hmm. It's that they're like, you know, 1,000 years ago, because they have this idea of a point system. For the afterlife, like if you put good into the world, you gain points, and if you put bad into the world, you lose points. Mm. It was like 1,000 years ago, like this dude like grew a rose and then gave it to his grandma, and he got like 50 points. And today he went to like a different guy, went to a flower shop and bought a rose, but it turned out that the rose was grown using pesticides and like it was like exploited labor to cultivate it. And the person who sold him the rose was underpaid, and also the owner of the flower shop was like a total douchebag and harasses their employees. Mm. And so he gave them money and then like blah, blah, blah. And so he got like actually
negative
like,
1,000 points.
Yeah. So he lost points because he brought a rose to his grandma. Nice. And so actually, so that like one of the themes in The Good Place is like, everybody goes to hell now because, you know, like
there's no way to everything, not participate.
By existing in the world, you are you're just adding to the net negatives because you participate, mm-hmm. right? Which is it's true.
Yeah.
But there's no other way, you know.
Yeah. What do you do?
So I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, that's yeah. it. I think that's it. Yeah, that's it.
Why can't we be the ones who just have the answer? You know, like why?
Somebody should.
We don't. <will. laughs> I like that this all leads up to as if we'd be like, here's what we
and do. Here's the answer,
right?
Anyways,
you know, super light stuff.
Let's talk mm-hmm. about the Steam
comedy
deck.
Podcast.
Let's talk about video.
Yeah,
games.
Steam Deck. Yeah,
I was curious because Seth was like, "I want to talk about this Blizzard thing," and I was like, "There's nothing good. There's nothing like."
I just want to get that out there. That like,
I mean,
yeah, you know what? There's nothing good here.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Sometimes you just gotta.
It just is bad, and we can all just kind of be in agreement on that. Mm-hmm.
But the Steam Deck, though, what about
that? But that Steam Deck. Let's talk about that Steam Deck.
It's pretty cool.
So the Steam Deck was announced, what, like last weekend?
Recently, yeah. Like
that? Yeah. Tell us about it, Sam.
It's a handheld PC.
It's a Switch.
It's a Switch that is better than a Switch.
It's a Switch Pro or whatever.
Well, actually, I think it's far better than that. That's probably true. Yeah, the Switch is, I'm going to be honest, not the best.
Yeah, imagine a Switch, but good.
Yeah, right. That's basically sort of like, what.
Well, Valve not, that's not about good. It's about power.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yes,
like good at yes. running video games.
Right. Yes. Yeah,
and like, people I think always, we can all agree that like the Switch can run video games, and that is what correct. It's for. But it's not good at
we can agree on that.
Yes. You know I mean? Yeah. And the video games on it are good games. We're not talking about that.
Also,
yep.
I don't want anybody coming here being so like, collectively, Breath of the Wild, shut it.
Yeah, collectively, it's a great experience to play games on a Switch.
You know? It's dope.
Nothing yeah. against the Switch. It's just that it's not that it could be more powerful.
Yeah, it could be better at its job.
So the Steam Deck is better at the job as far as running games. Okay, that specifically. Mm-hmm. I think the benefit of it is the fact that you you get access to your Steam library, which for most of us at this point runs deep, and being able to just like do the same thing you did on Switch, but then now with a library of games you probably have, I don't know, you know, decades of library stuff on it. Because like you don't have to worry. This is the whole point about like the console wars at some point becoming redundant. It's like it's really nice from a consumer standpoint to not have to rebuild your damn library every, you know, 4 to 7 years or something like that. Lose access to stuff.
This also kind of puts a dent in the Steam versus Epic sort of saga, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Unless we're going to get the Epic deck.
Yeah,
or maybe like the EpiPen, and it's like a small. No, that's a different thing.
Yeah,
yeah, it's probably cost the same.
Yeah, it costs $400. Oh, yeah. Dang it!
Yep.
Not to get back on that topic, but
yeah. Damn, oh, gross. Yeah, but I think that so the question then becomes: what does this mean in the context of like, you know, games in general, the PC market in general? I think to Seth's point about the interaction between Steam and Epic, it becomes far more interesting because. So far, they've just been competing on a software level, right? And I say competing lightly because, like, Epic's trying to get a toehold sort of in this battle. And so I think it's interesting because it shifts Valve away from so much more purely being on the software. Said, I know they made VR stuff. I don't need anybody to come in and be like, oh, they made VR. I know. It's just that no one cares about VR in the broader market. So, like, it doesn't.
Yeah, but also, like, you know, you still needed a PC.
You did.
You know, like Valve has made peripherals. They haven't made a full on.
Well, they did make that Steam gaming. Did they make
it? But again, it was the Steam machine.
Yeah. They made a thing. They made a thing at some point, but yeah, that was a while ago.
But again, it was sort of framed as like, yeah, you can play your Steam games on your TV with this.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which you already could do because computers have HDMI ports. So like this is nothing. They've done VR, which other people were doing. They've got the Steam controller, which, you know, it's a cool controller, but also there's lots of controllers. So they hadn't developed anything that seemed to create a unique competitive advantage for Steam as a platform. Mm-hmm. So if you showed somebody the Steam Deck, you might be able to convince them to get Steam, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And I feel like that wasn't necessarily the case for some of these other peripherals.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I think it's really cool. And what I'm excited about too is how this might shape up on the like Microsoft side of things too. Because of course, you know, Microsoft has Game Pass. And so they have their store, Microsoft Store on PC as well. And they've been trying to buff that thing up, you know, forever. And Game Pass is part of that strategy there. And so I'm curious about kind of what the crossover, if there's going to be crossover interaction there, or if this is now going to be standard that like everybody who's in the games business also creates handhelds. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
It would be the right defensive position to take, you know, if you're trying to, because I think Switch showed just how big of a market there is for that kind of a thing. Although they do have a huge advantage with Switch in that it is dockable and turns into a console, right? Which I don't think is true of the...
I think the deck does have that.
Does the deck do that too? Okay. Because in that case, like that's the trick, right? Is you make it so that it's accessible and it's... You just plug it in, you just use it, right? Which is... I think now with Xbox, right? It's like you got to buy this $1 trillion machine mm-hmm. and or I guess PlayStation does have a portable thing, supposedly. So I think
that's old. Yeah, they turned that off. Right?
Old hat.
Yeah. So with Xbox, they don't have that, right? And then neither does Epic, right? So they got their like the place where you go to get the thing, but it feels very like isolated,
ponderous,
like towered.
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Yeah, there's like a lot too. It's not a thing you can just go run out and play. Which is also where that's the space where mobile fits, right? Mobile fits mm-hmm. in that space where it's like, oh, I'm out and about and I want to play some video games. Like, pull out my phone and do it. I think there's something to be said for this, like being available on – in the same way that we as a game studio want our games to be available in all form factors, you know? So wherever you go, there's our games, you know? I think doing that from a platform perspective also makes sense because you don't give other companies the opportunity to have the thing because now if people want to play games on, you know, out in the world, they're getting a Switch. That's what's going to happen, right? Yep. And so if you start losing that market, because now that's where they buy a bunch of games. Oh, and look, they can plug it right into their TV and now it's a console. Like, well, if they can do that, why are they going to turn on their Xbox?
Yep.
Right. And then Switch opens up and they say, oh, like every game can come on here. We'll find a way to make it more or less work. Right. And so now everything's there. You can just like now that's where all of your games are instead. Mm-hmm. So I think this like move into subscriptions and then this move into cross form factor.
Yeah.
Is like, that is the move that makes the most sense if you're in direct competition with other enormous companies.
It's a great move.
Yep.
I think and I think about the experiences that I've had with a lot of consoles and the fact that I'm coming into those consoles from having been a PC gamer for so long. Mm-hmm. And it's always the case that if I have a game that I really like on PC and I'm like, I'd love to experience this on console, like on the big screen or on the Switch, mm-hmm. Portable or whatever, that there is a negative side of it, which is I've always got to start over and I've got to rebuy the game and I got to make a new account and I've lost all my progress, right? So like I started playing Rocket League on my Switch and I have hundreds of hours in Rocket League on Steam. So I got a cool car. It's customized just the way I want it. I've got lots of things unlocked and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I have a history of stats and stuff like that I can go back and look on from previous seasons. Nope. Boot up the Switch. I've got the default starter car, nothing unlocked.
None of it's there.
No stats. And so suddenly this is part of the struggle too that we were having as we were working on Levelhead, was trying to figure out how to navigate this like cross-platform space with the idea of a universal account that spans everything and make sure that wherever we put it, that holds true, right? Because we're like, it'd be weird if you published some levels, or you're working on levels on your desktop and then you go to another platform and you can't get into that same account and you – right? Or like if somebody played your levels from one machine and you change machines, then the stats from that don't carry over to this one, And so that kind of cross-platform data migration is great. But of course, the thing with the Steam Deck is it's not cross-platform anymore because it's all on Steam, but it's just now like
mm-hmm. – Well, this is actually the interesting thing I think about this walled garden strategy, right, of saying – because the goal is to keep people where they are. But it also creates a blocker for people coming in. Because if you already have the thing somewhere else and your data is not portable.
It is a wall. Walls work in both directions. They work in two ways. That's one of the things about walls.
Yeah, but it hinges upon the idea that like you are somehow dominant in a form factor. Because a form factor is what dictates. Yep. So somebody wants to cover every form factor in some way, right? Typically, right? So like – they might want to sit on their TV and play, so they're going to have something that can plug in their TV and play. Usually it's a console because everything else is too hard, right? They want to play on the go. Are they playing on their phone or they're playing on some sort of a mobile device of some sort made by some company, right? And so the more you wall people off, the more opportunity there is for somebody to creep into your form factor from a different one, right? Mm-hmm. So in this case, it's Steam is all like, oh, that portable space. That portable space where like phones are and where Switch is, right? Like, what if we just kind of move it? Ooh, and actually consoles, right? Because if it is the case, like, are you sure it plugs in as a console?
I'll look it up because
that's a huge. Because if that's the case,
that's a big feature. If they've got,
I mean, because that's actually the biggest feature. Because the main reason that, like, because I've actually been entertaining buying an Xbox. But if that's true, that Steam Deck can just plug into my TV?
Yes. The official dock props up your Steam Deck while connecting to external displays, wired networking, USB peripherals, and power.
Right.
So it's your deck dock.
It's your deck dock.
Deck dock.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so now take the PlayStation, right? So with PlayStation, except they have their first party games. Of course, they're only there anyway. But for everything else, where they've walled off all of the data, like mm-hmm. – if you've been playing on PC, well, now you're just gonna plug it in. You're just not gonna play it on PlayStation, right?
Yeah.
Because PlayStation walled you off, and so by having these companies creep into each other's spaces, like the walls start to backfire, which is
it's very interesting to watch.
So I like this move. But it's not even about like me wanting Steam to win or anything, right? Because like they're huge,
shit.
Yeah, that is right. But it's this chaos of these big companies trying to bypass each other and like find ways into each other's revenue streams and stuff is really fun and interesting to watch, and it's actually useful to us as like the little guys on the periphery to have these things happen and have these battles happen, because those are the things that shake up the industry and what kinds of opportunities become available to people trying to, you know, make and sell games for a living.
Isn't this the Littlefinger guy from Game of Thrones where he's like, chaos is a ladder? Sort of the situation.
We just gotta make sure we don't get the quote, stabbed. Then that's
by a bunch of children. No, be careful with that. I can't remember how he does, but it's not good.
It's not that way.
No, he was just—he was just straight up.
I think
executed.
He was just executed.
Oh, okay, yeah,
they
sure.
Just, yeah, first public humiliation, then execution.
Yeah. I believe he was de-headed.
Why do we say the term is unheaded?
Why do we say because beheaded sounds like a head has been placed upon you? You know what I mean?
That's true.
The bee is very head.
Yeah, exactly.
Should be de-headed.
It should be de-headed.
That's true. Deheaded or unheaded.
Maybe it's because they're actually talking about the basket that your head goes in.
You know, I mean, like, right, they de-head
beheading
the basket.
Now
that makes sense.
I've got a beef, you guys.
What's your beef?
I've got a beef. I mean, now that we're in this, I gotta say it. Any word that starts with re, like recycle, repudiate, rebuke, refactor, whatever, implies a second go around, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it should be common practice to use the base form of those words as well, right? So can you pudiate? And if so, mm-hmm. What does it mean? Can you buke?
What about for rent?
That was different because re is not the prefix of the base word. That's just part of the core word.
How do you know? How do you know which ones are prefixes and which ones are part of the core
word? Maybe
it's
just rent.
Reent.
Reent.
I ented, and now I'm gonna reent.
Yeah, because rent is something you have to pay. You have to pay it all the time. That's like its whole thing, right?
So you gotta reent.
You gotta keep doing it. So
if you're reenting, is your landlord enting every month?
No, every month you ent.
But relatively,
the first month you ent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you pay for something once, you ented it. Uh-huh. And then once you keep paying to keep getting access to that thing, then you've re-ented it.
Yep.
I think we can all agree.
Agreed. Right?
So
you heard it here.
Same thing, like if you repudiate something, that's where you've like contested it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think. Is that right?
Yeah, it's
repudiate.
Right. Yeah, it's close enough.
It's something like that. Yeah, but now that you say that, I'm like, I actually don't know what the exact meaning of that is. Like, if I heard it in context, I'd be like, yeah, I get what you're going for there. But
you could repudiate. Right,
it's to deny the truth or validity of something.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So, but it has re in front of it, which implies that it's something that's happening again. You know what I mean? So it's like pudiate must be something.
I think it's more of like in response. Pudiating would be like doing the initial – you know, reporting that could be repudiated as not true, right?
It's like sending the pudiation back at the original, exactly. At the pudiator.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody coming in, they're pudiating at me. I'm going to repudiate that shit right back.
100%. I guess because you have action.
You're coming
and
into my place of business and you're going to pudiate? I don't think so.
Get out of here. You're not going to be inting anything in this place ever again. No reason.
Seth's English Language Corner, which is a new segment on the podcast.
It's a very strange shaped corner. It's got a lot of.
It's actually a
disturbing
recurring
edges.
Segment.
A recurring segment.
Except for the first time.
Well, this time
it was just
recurring
segment.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I guess recur is actually.
It's short for reoccur. Yeah.
Ocur.
Reoccurring would be the full form of the word.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to make sure we get.
Yeah,
Draw.
Sometimes things get abbreviated, right? Yeah. So, all right, well, let's get on to maybe like a question. Ready?
Ready.
All right. These questions come from our listeners over at podcast.bscotch.net. Highest output of question comes from Ribdot, who says, "Hey, bros, I just re-listened to episode 292, the first episode of 2021.
Oh.
Now that it's about halfway through the year, I was wondering if we could get an update on everyone's dunking goals." Okay. So fortunately, this person has listed out what our goals were.
Okay, good, because I have no idea what those were.
Because none of us remember.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How are you bros doing so far with your New Year's dunks? Sam wanted to do a character design challenge every month. and blow people away with Crashlands 2.
All right, we should start one at a time and just
go good on the ladder, one of those.
Dunk Watch.
Yeah, Dunk Watch is doing really good on the ladder piece, but of course I'm not. We haven't shown anything to everyone, so you won't be able to verify that.
The few people who have seen it have.
They liked it. Nice.
Been very pumped. They
liked it. Haven't done the first one, which is pretty much
even I forgot.
Exactly. That's my point. Yeah, I was doing some character design challenge stuff. There's a monthly contest for that, yeah. So I always have that on my list of things, or some form of it. There's Clip Studio challenges as well that I've started. Never finish them because then I'm like, well, I got to go work on this cool Crashlands thing. So I do that instead. So
yep.
That's always been my struggle.
Which in a way, you know, is a character design challenge.
It's a very –
because you are designing characters.
A lot, yeah.
In a very accurate way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think you're nailing it.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right. So mine was to hit 200 pounds, do 3 game jams, and be a gladiator in WoW.
Ooh.
Okay. Did not hit gladiator yet. The season ended. I did pretty well.
How far off were
but
you?
But not – I didn't quite do as well as I did last season.
Dang. As a gladiator, that must be a good thing.
It's a 2,400 rating using a rating that's kind of similar to like the chess ELO system, right? Mm-hmm. Where like 1,500 is kind of like the starting point.
What's the best one?
3,000.
Okay.
Once you hit 3,000, you stop gaining rating. So they had a bunch of weird stuff this past season where the rating was behaving bizarrely and was several hundred points suppressed compared to last season. Mm. So some interesting things happened. Also, the game totally died at the end because it went so long without content updates that sometimes we would play matches and we would fight the same team 5 or 6 times in a row, even though the game will only do that as an absolute last resort if there's no other people playing.
Whoa.
So there were some times where we were playing during peak hours and it was my 3v3 team and one other 3v3 team, and those were the only 6 people.
Weird.
In our bracket. So some stuff happened, but I feel pretty good. I feel like we still got pretty far. We got near 2,100.
What about the 200 pounds?
I've been working on it, but I have to up my game because I underestimated how challenging this goal would be now that I'm mostly vegetarian.
Okay. Mm.
Because if you are lifting weights and eating a lot of meat, that you can get that protein like pretty easily. But the amount of food that you have to eat more food to get that protein as a vegetarian, you know, just overall. And so it's just harder to eat that much food.
The eating is the hardest part of actually doing that.
So I've actually been kind of laughing because I've weighed myself at the gym for the past 6 weeks. And every time I've weighed, I've been within 0.2 pounds of where I started. my weight has been so stable that it's actually starting to become concerning. Like, it shouldn't be that stable. You know what I mean?
Is it
like, it's supposed to go up and down a bit.
But it might be a body composition thing because, of course.
Yeah, you're just converting one kind of body type.
Yeah,
to
you might.
So,
like,
yeah,
might
but
be
why
a while
is
before
it
you,
so
– It takes
– So flat.
Conservation of mass, you know?
Yeah, I am a true neutral force
you're
in the universe
you're
right
a Newtonian,
now.
You're a Newtonian person. That's just what it is.
Yeah. And 3 game jams, done 2 so far.
Boom, boom.
So pretty good. Pretty good. I'm on pace. All right. And Adam wants to spend more time sharing knowledge via dev chats, streaming, etc.
Mm. I did a bunch of
– Both of those.
I did 19 dev chats before I got busy doing other things and stopped, which was probably a couple months ago now. But I did 19 weeks in a row of those, which is pretty good.
That's great.
That's like 4 or 5 months, whatever. So I did that, and then I did a bunch of streams, put some up on YouTube, did that kind of stuff. So there were a lot. I did take a long hiatus for the past, I want to say 2 months, something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to get back into it again, but now this will be coming from a new angle, which is running a company as the person purportedly in charge, you know. So
it's like biz chats instead of dev chats.
So
I think is kind of interesting too, because one of the things that we noticed when we first started doing more research into management and stuff like that is that is that because business is all about people, right? Like it's all about figuring out how to like get people onboarded, get them trained, keep them satisfied with their work, make sure they know what's going on, a lot of communication management, and also just like framing of like building structures for people so that they understand what's going on, right? But it's all people, people, people. And because of that, I think we found that so many business resources actually neglect talking about that aspect of business because it's about people. And any experiences that experienced business owners or CEOs or whatever have are going to be experiences that they had with a person, like with a specific person or a specific group of people. And talking publicly about those experiences is very tough to figure out how to navigate. And so most people just don't. Like the stuff they talk about is they don't disclose all the things that would be truly helpful about their experiences with working with people.
Well, this is particularly true of a small company, right? Because in a big company, like –
Yeah, if you're working with like 1,000 people, could be anyone.
It could be anyone.
Yeah,
could be anyone. Yeah. So you can ride that line a lot more easily. And as a small, because I think that's for me the big thing has always been that the stuff that's out there is for at the smallest companies of like 30 plus people.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. But mostly it's actually even bigger than that. And so things are very abstract in that context, right? They're both abstract and bureaucratic simultaneously, right? Because it's trying to apply in a general way, but it's at a level where there's a lot of institutional structure that's been developed over time, right? And so when people are talking about like agile team management, right? And it's like, oh, here's how you do this. You take your scrum master and then you have your team of developers and you have like – and they start listing all the people involved, right?
What if I'm the person?
Yeah. What if I'm the one person? You know?
How do I manage that?
How do I scrum myself? You know? What does that even mean? And does is that a useful thing to do? Right. And then in the case of like of now deciding to have me behave as the CEO, right? How fucking weird is that? Right. So I'm a co-founder of this company. I've been working for it and on it for 7 or 8 years or whatever. Right.
Yep.
And we've been making decisions sort of collectively and whatever, but I've mostly been focused on the work, right? And the work specifically of building certain things. And then we just decided, you know, like, oh, okay, I'm going to be the CEO now, right? So the fuck does that look like? Like, not as a title, but as an actual, or I guess it is a title, but one that actually accurately describes a role, right? Which we previously were not using those titles for. But that process of going from a founder of a company and converting it into like a business in like the businessy sense, you know, like there's the C-suite of people doing stuff that makes sense for a business to do, right? And there's the board of directors, and then there's the shareholders, and all these parts, and like underneath this is all these different like pseudo siloed departments, right? Each with their own hierarchy and so on, and. And we've never had that because it never felt like it made sense because there's so few of us, right? But it actually does, you know, now probably we think makes sense. But it can't look like what it looks like in other places, right? And so like for me, the realization that there's actually a lot of lessons to be learned in those places, but the way that we have to do it is to do really weird stuff. Like when the three of us have a meeting at the outset, say, are we acting as employees and colleagues here? Or are we acting as the board of directors here? Or are we acting as the shareholders here, right? And then in each of those cases, my role in particular is then weird because the CEO answers to all those in different ways, right, as well. So then the question, not only what are the three of us doing, but then within that, what am I doing? Am I a CEO right in the moment or am I just one of the shareholders, right? And realizing that if we thought about things in that way, so that we're not always bringing – every role into every discussion that we can actually streamline and make things easier to do, right? But that's a lot of very conscious,
very nuanced, weird shit,
documentation. It's very weird, right?
Yeah.
Like how I've never read anybody anywhere talk about this, right? Like ever.
So it, yeah. So it may come out in a biz chat or something like
that. Yeah, I don't
know. So yeah. It's hard to find stuff like that. So if it does happen, then you know, hopefully everybody finds it interesting. And
yeah,
maybe somewhat useful at least.
Yep.
All right, well, that's all the time we have for this week. We kind of got into it this week. Things happened.
A lot happened.
Yeah, we broke some seals, folks.
Mm-hmm. We did. That's the thing is, that's always how it begins. And I think it would be fair to say we did some splash damage with that broken seal. A lot of shards flew off. A lot of blood.
With that dry noodle.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'd like to thank our producers, Fat Bard and Jen Koster, for putting this episode together. And thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord running. To get more involved in the Butterscotch community, just go to podcast.bscotch.net. We have links to the Discord, a way for you to donate, and links to the archives. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.